Welcome to Healthcare Du Jour, where we dish up and digest the latest in healthcare. For the next 30 minutes, sit back as we bring you insight, commentary, and discussion on trending topics to the table, all expertly served up by our host and his guests. Healthcare Du Jour is brought to you by High-Tech Answers and Healthcare Now Radio, part of the Answers Media Network, and is sponsored by the Law Offices of Myrick O'Connell. Now here is your host, Matt Fisher.
Welcome back, and thank you for joining as we dive into the hottest topics in healthcare. I'm your host, Matt Fisher. On the menu today is Dr. Dean Smith, CMIO at GlobalMed. Welcome, Dr. Smith.
Well, thank you, Matt. Appreciate the opportunity to chat with you today.
Yeah, well, it's great to have you on. And kind of before we get into the main part of our conversation, I always like to have my guests give a little bit of an introduction in terms of who they are and what they do.
Well, I'm an internal medicine physician, medical informaticist, and now I'm chief medical information officer at GlobalMed, which is a leading manufacturer of telemedicine hardware and software based in Scottsdale, Arizona, although I reside and work out of Washington, D.C.
I know you just said that you're both a physician and an informaticist and now kind of working on the telemedicine or telehealth hardware side, but what was the first spur for you to get into healthcare in the first place?
Yeah, great question. I've always liked science and humanities growing up, in university, et cetera. In fact, I initially obtained a foreign language degree and then realized I wanted to combine my passion for both the humanities and sciences. So I went back and got a second degree in chemistry. And then along the way, I had a very influential professor and mentor and suggested maybe healthcare medical profession would be a good fit. And applied to medical school, and the rest is history.
Did you have a long career in practice before? Because I think now it sounds like you're more on the administrative or kind of advisory side as opposed to direct patient care.
Yeah, I mean, prior to joining GlobalMed, I was in the federal sector for a number of years. And then even prior to that, I worked in private practice as an internist in a multi-specialty care setting for over 10 years.
So, and then kind of one other background question, because I think you, if I'm recalling correctly, you might actually be the first CMIO that we've had on the show. So could you be able to describe kind of what the purpose of that role is and kind of where you fit into an organization?
Yeah. So, the CMIO is a relatively new position in the healthcare technology space, if you will. And really what it brings is a nexus of medicine and technology. And I like to think of myself as a bridge between the two. So I've got a foot in both worlds. I kind of speak both languages. I've had formal training in both, of course. And I help bridge those two often disparate communities.
And as you said, it is a relatively new role. So are you finding that there's also a correspondingly few number of individuals like yourself who have that dual training?
Well, I think that, yeah, there's a more than, I guess, what you would think. Almost every major healthcare organization now has a CMIO or equivalent position or positions as an entity. You can now even get medical certification in clinical informatics. So really in the last 10, 15 years, there's really been an uptick in this career path.
No, I think you're definitely right. It seems like, not to be a little pessimistic about it, but almost every time you turn around, it seems like there's a new C-level title coming out in healthcare. But the combination of the different perspectives that you've described for the CMIO role feels especially needed, given that the system is shifting into such a heavy use and reliance upon technology.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct.
So in thinking about that kind of technology perspective, you mentioned that you're involved with telehealth now. So from your perspective, what is telehealth?
Well, I think boiling it down to its simplest, it's connecting clinicians and patients whenever there's geographic separation, and you're using technology in some form or another to make that connection.
So, and when you're talking geographic separation, I'm guessing that could be really any type of distance, especially given, I've heard of some uses within urban settings. And so really, it sounds like trying to overcome barriers to travel or barriers to the accessing the specific site where the clinician might be.
That's exactly right. The clinician and consulting clinician, or the clinician and his or her patient could be around the block. They could be in another state, county. They could be in another country. And so it's really about that access and making that connection.
So kind of what are the tools or what are some of the practices that can help facilitate the development of that type of remote connection?
Well, on the clinical side, you want to look at what clinical pinch points are you trying to solve. So are you doing primary care? Are you doing specialty care? And you have to have equipment, you know, related to the level of care you want to deliver. The other side of the equation, of course, is the technology for communication. So if you have real-time or synchronous telemedicine, you have to think about, are you going to be using a Wi-Fi platform, a cellular, maybe satellite? You need some sort of immediate connectivity. The other option, of course, is store and forward or asynchronous telemedicine, where you can capture the clinical artifacts, pictures, whatever you're doing, and then sending that off, and then at a later date, having follow-up care delivered.
Yes, and I think kind of your description of the synchronous connection first is, you know, I think kind of very particular in terms of going in that direction first, because I bet a lot of individuals who think about telehealth or telemedicine are thinking about that, you know, kind of video-based interaction as opposed to the asynchronous that you were describing.
Yeah, increasingly that's where the technology has taken us. You know, there's a demand certainly on the patient side for that real-time connectivity. But to really realize the full benefit of telemedicine, telehealth, that real-time connectivity is very important.
And what are some of the challenges around that real-time connectivity? It's, you know, just kind of thinking about the development, you know, I obviously I know it's not the same, but thinking about the development of streaming video services, you know, I remember when streaming video first came, it was always that extremely choppy video, or, you know, you fear getting the wheel of death where you're just stuck in loading phase. You know, so it would seem like given that video connectivity and just internet connection overall is a lot stronger and faster, that might be better. But, you know, are there those types of issues when we're talking about synchronous telehealth?
Yeah. When I look at it, I when I think of real-time telemedicine challenges related to delivering remote healthcare, if you will, I think of two things, two main barriers. And as I mentioned earlier, first is just getting the right technology to the patient, which generally means you got to know what medical issues you're going to be addressing. So if it's mental health evaluation, counseling, you're going to need some sort of secure video conferencing solution. Whereas something like surgical care, you're going to need to capture vital signs, wound care assessment. So a digital camera is going to be very important. Whereas if you're going to do the full spectrum of primary care, again, that's where you're going to need, you know, your vitals, your cameras, otoscopes, stethoscopes, maybe even ultrasound. But, and I think that's one of the real powers of telemedicine, telehealth, is that it is so expandable or scalable to accommodate those various use cases. But the second challenge, and the main one that, you know, we were talking about earlier, is this communication network. You've got to have at least reasonable bandwidth to make that happen. Again, a good platform, though, is going to have failover redundancy. So your Wi-Fi is down, okay, you can jump onto a cellular network. Cellular's down, you can use satellite, whatever network you can tap into to deliver the care. And you got to be thinking about that when you do telemedicine.
So, and actually kind of thinking about that piece that you were just talking about of having the different fail safes and being able to tap into it, that would seem to suggest utilizing it in maybe different remote areas than might necessarily think of, you know, probably coming from an East Coast bias. While we do have rural areas, maybe not as expansive as in other parts of the country. So do you see different technological barriers in different locales of where you might be trying to implement the technology?
Yeah, you do. And obviously what you have available in the Eastern Corridor or the U.S. is going to be drastically different than what you're going to have in the rural areas of Alaska. Yet nonetheless, telehealth is being performed in rural areas of Alaska. And again, it might be going over a satellite, at least intermittently, or some form of cellular connectivity. But there are solutions, and I would say if you throw up your hands and say, well, the network just isn't going to allow us to do telemedicine, you haven't really done full diligence in what the technology can deliver.
No, I think that's a very fair point. And now I kind of want to switch back to the other piece that you've been talking about, which is thinking about the type of care that you want to be delivering with the telehealth solution. And I guess that raises a first fundamental question, which is, can telehealth cover the delivery of any kind of service, or are there particular services from your perspective that are may be better suited to potential delivery through a telehealth solution?
Yeah, increasingly there's almost no ambulatory solution or ambulatory use case that you can't address with telemedicine. The caveat being, the one thing you can't do, obviously, with telemedicine is touch the patient. So anything that's invasive requires the patient to come into the actual clinic, to the brick and mortar space. But, you know, we're seeing telemedicine, obviously telestroke, teledermatology, telepsychiatry. The mental health providers have really been the vanguard leaders of showing what the technology can do to increase access, outcomes, et cetera.
Yeah, with some of those examples you just gave, it would also seem that some of the drivers of utilization are areas where there's maybe not a sufficient number of clinicians to be able to be spread all over the place. So it's a means of accessing that needed type of care.
Absolutely correct. Here's a great example of what I just saw recently, a fairly rural area, but they have a hospital system that had some in-house neurology physicians that were doing telestroke, but they were doing stroke assessments, but they were just getting burned out. There were only a couple of them, and it was every other night. They were up all night, et cetera. So they outsourced that to a large metropolitan area in the same state that could provide 24/7 telestroke support from neurologists. That's all they do. So it gave the local neurologists, it freed up their time to do the bread and butter neurology, if you will, and not get burned out doing all the stroke assessments. That's just a great example of where telemedicine can solve a local issue.
And I think even beyond addressing the concerns about as you're just describing it, the physicians trying to cover issues where maybe they don't have as great a familiarity, it kind of goes on to the other side as well, and sounds like it can enhance the quality of care that a patient is receiving.
Absolutely. Yep. You get the right patient in front of the right specialist, the right clinician at the right time. And that's really the key to giving good healthcare and increasing healthcare outcomes.
So kind of where do you see use of telehealth going in the coming years? Because it feels like it's been a big topic of discussion for, I'd say at least the past 3 or so years. And there's always a promise of, it's going to hit this point where all of a sudden it's really rolling and becomes ubiquitous within the delivery of care. And maybe it has reached that point, and it's just that it's the actual uses are flying under the radar, and that the hype kind of created a false impression. But kind of what's your sense of how things actually are, and then where it will be going?
Yeah, we've been tracking that. I've been tracking that. Certainly what we've seen historically is sort of steady growth and adoption. But I think there has been a recent uptick, and there were some studies out recently. I saw an article in JAMA, Journal of American Medical Association, late last year, showing that telemedicine use had increased significantly since 2016. About 50% growth per year prior to that, to now over 200% per year. So that obviously shows an uptick. That stated, telemedicine is still, I think, widely under-adopted and still a fairly small piece of the healthcare delivery pie, if you will. But the real drivers, patient demand, patients want the access, they want the convenience. And then the other, of course, huge thing is reimbursements. You follow the money. Medicare, Medicaid are starting to reimburse for telehealth encounters, as are some private insurers. We're seeing parity laws that mandate telemedicine coverage and reimbursements that are on par with usual and customary, healthcare. So all of those, I think, are driving what we're going to see in the future, which is just a uptick in usage and adoption.
Yeah, and for those of you just joining, I'm talking with Dr. Dean Smith from Global Med, and we're talking about the benefit and use of telehealth and telemedicine. Dr. Smith, I agree, as you were just saying, for a primary driver, I think, to increase or to continue the increased adoption of telehealth, the reimbursement is essential, because if you could have the best tool in the world, but if you're not going to be paid for its use, it's hard to justify putting it into place and also to probably cover the cost of being able to utilize it.
Yeah, and as we the U.S. healthcare system in general transitions from a fee-for-service to value-based care models, I think again that will also drive telemedicine adoption forward.
Yeah, no, and actually, that's a very good observation in terms of the connection of value-based care. Would you be able to expand upon that a little bit more and provide some insight into how they align with each other?
Yeah, if you look at outcomes, there's an increasing body of data in the medical literature showing that telemedicine, telehealth can increase or can improve healthcare outcomes, telestroke, again, telepsychiatry. Part of that is through access. Part of it, again, is getting the right specialist in front of the patient at the right time. And as we see those numbers come out, let's face it, you can do better healthcare at less cost. That sells itself.
No, and that I definitely agree with you. It's, as you said, as the focus becomes on quality, you need to figure out how to be able to most efficiently and with the best outcomes deliver care to patients.
Yep. And again, like we talked about earlier, telemedicine isn't for every patient. There are patients that do need to come in to the brick and mortar space. But again, often early in the course of a telemedicine, telehealth encounter, you can make that determination that, okay, we're going to stop the encounter at this point and we're going to move you into the acute care setting, if you will, because of the nature of your healthcare problem.
And as you're approaching these different, implementation questions and hurdles, I want to go back to something you said towards the beginning in terms of your background, which is that you've had both private and government experience. So how have those two experiences been able to help you as you're kind of thinking about your approach to care delivery and telehealth?
Well, you get to see the whole spectrum of the healthcare delivery system from, again, coming up through the ranks in terms of, the fee-for-service models and then watching the transition to value-based care and then working in the federal sector where it's not necessarily reimbursement-driven. There are other factors involved. But again, getting to see the whole spectrum of care delivery models, I think, has been, for me, very helpful as I progress through my career and certainly as I look at helping push telehealth adoption forward.
And kind of as you just said, from the federal sector perspective, I think you just said, you're not tied into the reimbursement or the regular system. So kind of what were some of the government roles that you filled?
So, right after residency, I had a medical school scholarship obligation that detailed me to the Department of Justice for a short period of time. Then, as I mentioned, I went into private practice. But I joined the Foreign Service as a medical officer. It's with the U.S. Department of State. Initially assigned overseas and did tours in Lima, Peru, and Moscow, Iraq, Bangkok. And then along the way, I actually took advantage of a sabbatical program State Department offered and obtained my master's degree in medical informatics. And then returned back to Washington, D.C., where I served as State Department's CMIO and then as their deputy medical director. So I had a pretty long, varied career with State Department, got to see a lot of the world and certainly got to see healthcare delivery around the globe from many, many different angles.
So I'd actually be very interested to hear about, maybe some of the practices that you were able to experience from around the world that you were able to take and maybe try to adapt to improve the delivery of healthcare your different roles, and then maybe things that you saw where the U.S. system does do it better, because, whether rightly or wrongly, it seems like the U.S. system is getting a lot of negative attention about how high cost it is and how inefficient, and that maybe it isn't as good as other places in the world.
Yeah, U.S. medical system in general is the best in the world in terms of technology, what we do, what we can do, the procedures. Everybody around the globe wants to come to the U.S. to do their medical training, et cetera, for those reasons. Yet we have a lot of inequities. We have a lot of inefficiencies. That stated, there is no perfect. And again, having looked around the globe, there is no perfect solution out there. And I should backtrack a little bit just to explain that. So at State Department, the Bureau of Medical Services, they provide healthcare to U.S. diplomats and their families at our U.S. embassies and consulates worldwide. And obviously, that includes some of the most remote, medically austere locations in the world. And so I was able to really see, during my career, I was able to see how medical care is delivered in those locations and, spend time in Africa and Mongolia, war zones of Iraq and Afghanistan, and really came away very impressed with the U.S. healthcare system, but realizing we obviously have room for improvement.
So even though, as you said, with your State Department role, if you're focused on care for people within the embassy or, you know, the U.S. citizens who you might be, you know, kind of coming under your jurisdiction at that point in time, were you kind of interfacing with local healthcare delivery, or was it contained solely within like a State Department purview?
No, we interfaced all the time. In fact, one of the main facets of the job as a medical officer was to assess local healthcare systems to determine what medical care could be delivered reasonably safely on the local economy, if you will, and what couldn't be delivered. So you always had to be knowledgeable about what patients you might need to have medevac out of that country because they don't do open heart surgery, for example, as maybe an extreme example. But that was one of the facets of the job that was very fascinating, was the in-depth look at how healthcare is delivered in other countries.
So, what would your approach be when you're assessing the care delivery system within another country?
Well, first and foremost is meet the key players, and that would, you know, obviously include the local hospital or hospital staff, tour facilities, ask questions diplomatically, of course, but try to get a good sense of local health intel. Often discussing this with ministries of health in other nations, the experience of other expats and expat clinicians that are found worldwide were also very, very helpful to us.
And it would seem like a lot of those types of assessment questions and kind of drilling down into how it operates would apply within the U.S. healthcare system as well, because, you know, I think kind of goes back to what we were saying, which is every part of the country and even within the same region of our country, you can have some fairly extreme variation, and being able to figure out how to make the right connections would be very valuable.
Yeah, and I, you know, to double back to telemedicine, telehealth, it levels the playing field in some regard, because you can be in the remote areas of Alaska or wherever in the U.S., yet be connected back to a specialist, you know, at some major medical center in the United States and get that level of care through the technology. So it is an incredibly powerful tool to level the healthcare playing field.
No, definitely. And it would also just go to the, you know, the main premise of, you know, what so much conversation generally talks about, which is the world as a whole is so interconnected now that you can, you know, metaphorically or technologically reach across to anywhere that you want to at any time of the day or to anyone.
Yeah. And, you know, on the communication technology front, we're seeing so many changes and improvements, devices, the capabilities of devices, and then the networks themselves, you know, with the low Earth satellites that are coming online, the 5G here in the United States and some other nations, you know, all of those are going to be incredibly useful to deliver telehealth, to provide virtual care.
Oh, no, certainly. And I guess as we're already starting to get very close to the end of our time, all this discussion raises another question to me, which hopefully we can dive into probably all too briefly, but thinking about the accessibility of data, because if you're taking your State Department experience, I'd imagine trying to make sure you, as an individual, present with something, trying to make sure you had access to all the right data was extremely challenging. And kind of how do you see data issues impacting all the use of, you know, telehealth or telemedicine in these different technology solutions?
Yeah, you first off, you have to have a good platform that captures the data so you can make your evidence-based clinical decisions. And, you know, again, the medical hardware, the software that we work with here does exactly that. And it gives the clinician the data right in front of them real time to make those important decisions. And then the other piece, of course, is the interoperability, a great issue across the U.S. Healthcare system. But you got to make sure that data can be ported across the disparate technology platforms.
Yes. Now, and kind of, as you said, with interoperability being a big issue, it will need to be something to focus on. But, you know, as I said, I think we probably gave that issue a little bit of short shrift, but believe it or not, we are already out of time. I want to thank my guest, Dr. Dean Smith, for a great conversation today.
Matt, thank you very much for the opportunity to speak with you as well.
And thank you to everyone listening. Keep the dialogue going and connect with me at hashtag HCD. DEJURE. I'm Matt Fisher. Until next time.